Mate, and what we've been trying to do over the past few months and on air this week is to work out what the Ballad of Reading Jail would sound like if it had been written in 2009. We've done that by sending in a team of poets to work with present-day offenders in Reading Jail and other places in this area. John Potter from Company Paradiso has been working on this with us back in the studio this morning. Hi, John.
Good morning.
So today, we really are talking about ballads because the stuff that's been put together for today's programme is in song.
That's right. Obviously, we've worked with poetry and words, but some of those words, partly because they're very story-based, have converted very, very well into the ballad form, and halfway through the project, we decided that we would sing some of these.
Okay, we've got performance poet John Hegley back in the studio this morning. Hi, John.
Hello.
Going to start off by hearing from you then this morning. I'm going to hear something called The Jail, which is one of the few bits of work that's been done as part of this that's been written specifically about Reading Prison, written by an inmate called John and performed live for us now by John Hegley.
I've got to say that when John reminded me of these words, I said, is that Oscar Wilde? When that says something about the quality of some of the writing we've had. Raised on a hill overlooking the city, like a great stone scar reverberating with life it stands. Stripped off humanity, herded into pens like restless cattle around a slaughter gate. Contaminated by a seething hostility, we wait. At every shade of surrounding grey I stare, then at a space chameleon like a small space of my own I stare. Locked up on a barren wing in a small cell containing the feeling of loss, when the harsh routine of daily grind and the defiant uniform both camps wear becomes normal, there's a space of my own I claim.
Wow. And we've said this all week, but that was good, wasn't it? And whether the kind of musical aspect of it makes it even more impressive, I'm not sure, but, you know.
Yeah, it's really good, and also quite different kind of writing about landscape and a descriptive kind of writing, and I thought it worked really well in song.
I mean, in terms of bringing out emotion and, you know, speaking to the heart and all of that, I guess it's probably harder to do when you're describing physical things rather than feelings.
I think that's much more unusual, yes, in the writing we've been getting.
You sort of said before you performed it, you thought it was good, John, but yeah. Give me more of your sort of reaction to that as a piece of work.
It's just, you get a sense of a ballad is a story that goes along, but you get a story of the emotional. There's an emotional story in that, the coming in there, feeling completely alienated by it, but moving on, okay, so there's this is the situation, okay, I'm going to find, that's my little place of hope, and that's the place where I find myself and find my strength, and the idea of going in is to make that space a little bit bigger with the work we've been doing.
Was that your interpretation musically of John's words, or did he have a kind of hand in that as well?
I think, yeah, I mean, if I were to look at it again, I'd probably sort of end on a major chord, actually. I sort of ended on a minor chord, but I want to end, unfortunately, on a mandolin. The minor chord and the major chord are the same. So I'd probably redo that with a guitar, finishing on a cheerfuler note.
With a bit more hope in there. I mean, people will be familiar with the word, but what is a ballad? I'll give you both of this challenge to try and explain to us what a ballad is.
Well, should I just start? I mean, obviously, John's probably better qualified than me, but, I mean, the way we've looked at it is a ballad is lots of verses. They're short line verses with alternating three or four beats in each line, but basically each verse ends on a rhyme. And obviously, they're story-based.
Mm-hmm. And does it have to be sung, John, really?
I mean, the Ballad of Reading Jail, which I think sounds fantastic sung. Actually, I've got to say, I have sung that. And doesn't have to be sung. And you can break away from... it's quite a broad
way of doing stuff. And I mean, this John's poem that we've just read out, The Jail, it's sort of quite, the lines of varying length, actually.
Okay, we're going to remind ourselves of the original Oscar Wilde Ballad of Reading Jail, or at least some of it, as read by the people of Reading. This is how a ballad can sound when not sung.
In Reading Jail by Reading Town, there is a pit of shame.
And in it lies a wretched man,
eaten by teeth of flame.
In burning, winding sheet he lies,
and his grave has got no name.
I know not whether laws be right or whether laws be wrong. All that we know
who lie in jail
is that the wall is strong.
And that each day is like a year whose days are long.
The vilest deeds, like poison weeds,
bloom well in prison air.
It is only what is good in man
that wastes and withers there.
Pale anguish keeps the heavy gate,
and the warder is despair.
Still good, that, isn't it, really? And you know, again, sort of the words really make you stop your thought processes about anything else and really draw you in, which I guess is the point of anything like that.
Yeah,
isn't
I mean,
it, really?
And obviously you're hoping to move away from this, you know, this is how it was, and look, all these years later, you're hoping that the warder is not despair, the warder is hope.
Did you find the idea of using words that were going to a song, into music, engage some of the guys into, you know, being involved in this, where perhaps they weren't interested in the poetry side of it, John Potter?
Yes, and what we've done in the probation services is that we've worked sometimes on participants' own songs and own music, and they've had a CD of their own stuff, so they've gone away with a song or a rap of their own.
Right. I mean, is there something about it turning into music that makes it a bit cooler, maybe, in the minds of some people? I don't know. Perhaps people are more...
I think it's
music
more,
plays more a part in all of our lives,
yes,
all the time, perhaps, than poetry
more,
does.
They can take a CD away and play it to friends. It's a bit easier, maybe, to show to friends and to keep playing within your family or your, you know...
Uh-huh. And did you get that from dealing with the guys, John, that the music, you know, brought it alive for some people?
Yeah, well, we had a letter about the pre-record we've done. We did at The Jail... from John, who wrote that, and he was pleased with that.
Right, okay. We're going to hear a poem written by Liam now. Tell us more about Liam, and tell us more about what we're going to hear next, John.
Right, yes. Liam is distinct in that quite a lot of his language seems to come from psalms or hymns. I think you'll notice that when we play them, and obviously that fits song very well. I think he's an amazing writer. He was with us for quite a short time in Reading Jail and was then shipped out. And the first piece is something that we felt would be great sung by a big group of male voices. In fact, we even had this image of it being done by a prison choir, or you know, by being sung on the wing or something like that, a wing of the prison. But in the end, we gave it to Thames Valley Chorus and asked them if they could do something with
it. Yes, our friends from the Thames Valley Chorus have been working on this, and you went along with the microphones to one of their nights when they meet up at the Pickett School in Wargrave. And this is the result. So these are Liam's words, and it's called Stand and Fight.
I'm feeling so up, yet I'm locked down in the night. I'm hyping so much, like I could take flight. I should have to stand and fight. I'm feeling so up, yet I'm locked down in the night. I'm hyping so much, like I could take flight. Take flight.
Liam's ballad is called Stand and Fight, performed by a Thames Valley Chorus for us, 9:25. I mean, we talked a lot about the themes that come out through the, you know, the project, through the poems that have been written. Was that another common one, this sort of, like, battle about, you know, when to stand up for yourself and when to be the big guy and all of that, which is what I was getting from that?
Yes, it was Liam's particular theme. Yeah, I'm really moved by that, and I just really felt that it's so good for Liam to be supported by that chorus singing. I felt he was being supported by them, and I hope that'll take him a long way.
That's one thing about the music aspect. It means that, you know, this thing can be performed then by a band member. We're going to hear that in a moment or two, by a whole group of people there, which must be lovely for someone who's written something. It must be. I've not had the experience. It must be nice, though.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing, and I'm so grateful for Thames Valley Chorus, who are really busy, for taking the time to come and do this for Liam.
You know, John Hegley, what did you make of that? Because you were listening to that intently.
It's lovely, wasn't it? I mean, and it will be, if you hear, I mean, I remember the first time I heard something that I recorded just in a bedroom but played over a good system. I thought, wow, you can do that. It can be like that. And so to have it put back, basically just fed back to you. Because a lot of the time you're writing this stuff and you never get it back. You never see what it is. And so that's very important for it to mirror for these chaps, the stuff.
So it means their work matters, and other people are impressed enough to want to spend a bit of time working on it.
Yeah, and that they can be impressed.
Gotcha.
By their own stuff.
Let's move on to Liam's second poem then. This is called Charlie Finn. Tell us a bit more about this, John.
Well, again, it's... I mean, I didn't know Liam very well, but this one was actually sent through to us from another jail where he'd been moved on to. And again, it has a lot of these references to things that seem to come from a church past. I don't know whether that's actually true, but again, those themes are very present.
And this one was performed for us by James Ewers, who's from My Lumeries, which is a Reading band, you know, up-and-coming band at the moment. It's a different style of thing. Let's have a listen then to Liam's second poem, Charlie Finn.
Darkest hour of the loneliest night, I've seen all the world bust up and fight upon a field of low yield. God knows, hell knows, I see clubs on the street rise to their feet as blood flows. As blood flows. Remember Charlie Finn. Remember Charlie Finn. A soldier nobody knows. Like warriors of old, you still fight, and it shows just how little we've learned over centuries of hostility. One goes out, one comes in, shrieks come from Charlie Finn and ring out across a world of sin. Remember Charlie Finn. Remember Charlie Finn. A soldier nobody knows. Oh, young Charlie Finn, do not despise. Let man into those bloodshot eyes. Let man see behind those gunshot eyes. See what goes on, sin in the night. Let man in, and you will find yourself in a field of better yield. Remember Charlie Finn. Remember Charlie Finn. A soldier nobody knows. Remember Charlie Finn. Remember Charlie Finn. A soldier nobody knows.
Liam's words, sung by James from My Luminaries, who's with us live. Hi, James.
Hi, hey there.
Good, thanks. Thanks for being involved in the project is the first thing we want to say. Thank you for, you know, taking the time to be bothered to perform that, because I'm guessing when Liam hears that on the radio this morning and when he gets the CD later, he's going to treasure that.
Oh, I hope so. I had to change a few words here and there. So hopefully, you won't be too offended.
Because
I know I would be.
If someone had messed around with your lyrics. I mean, you've not met Liam, so how was that as a challenge as a musician to get his words and try and, you know, convey the meaning that you took out of them that you imagine he intended?
I don't normally write music to lyrics. Usually, the other way around. Usually, I write the lyrics to the music, so for me it was a challenge anyway, but equally it was a challenge to have to convey, you know, someone else's emotions, especially such strong emotions, you know.
I mean, tell me, how made you feel when you read through the words, then you performed it as we've just heard? What effect did that have on you, James?
I can only imagine what must have been coming from his heart, if you see what I mean. I suppose my reaction, it was in the music. I mean, instantly I wanted to write something that sounded quite lonely and desperate, and the first thing that came to mind was what you hear, very sort of
haunting, like, is the word I would use, but I, you
haunting,
know,
yeah, almost like a lonely rhinestone cowboy on the hills.
Sure. John Hegley, what did you make of that?
I thought it was a fantastic arrangement, and congratulations on the pair of you, writer and performer. And also the field of better yield, I think you can take that out as almost a motif for all of this. We're trying to find a field of better yield.
Yeah. John Potter, I mean, yeah. you worked with Liam.
Yeah, many thanks to James, that was fantastic. And I would say that he's changed very, very few of the words, and he's repeated some of the Charlie Finn, but that's almost all. So, you know, it's very, very faithful to the original poem.
Yeah, you're in a local band, James. You've done a gig in the prison, haven't you? Sort of Johnny Cash style.
I've put on a gig, myself and a friend. Yet to play, actually. We're going to be playing soon, hopefully.
Right. So, it's obviously something that you feel passionately about. Tell me why.
I think rehabilitation is something I feel passionate about. And I think, without sounding too sceptical, I think in our society where people are so eager to believe what certain media says, I think, you know, it's... I feel blessed to be able to see things differently, you know.
So you buy into the... I mean, the concept here, I suppose, is that if you spend a bit of money and time and effort on working with, you know, guys in somewhere like Reading Prison on music or poetry or whatever it is, it's good for them. It gives them a way of expressing themselves, thinking about life and what they've done and people they miss and all that, and it might just stop them going the same way in the future. That's the point of all this, isn't it?
I think if it gives them some self-esteem, you know, I don't think you can expect everyone to take to it. Even if one person took to it out of a whole group, then I think, you know, that's progress.
You're worth bothering.
Certainly.
James, thank you for coming on this morning. Thanks for being involved.
Thank you
very much. That's James Ewers from My Luminaries, the Reading band. We're going to come on to talk more about that very point shortly. What do you make of what you've heard this week? We've talked a lot about the quality of the work, but what about the idea of public money from different sources being spent to help guys who've committed crimes, who are being punished, work on this kind of thing, work on poems and songs? Does that feel right to you? Be interested to hear your thoughts. We'll get some opinions on this from all quarters in a second or two, but I'd like to hear yours. The Andrew Peach Show. So we asked this morning, are you convinced that this is a good use of money, spending money on poetry projects and music projects with inmates, so in theory you don't have to spend so much money on keeping them locked up in years to come when they reoffend? Do you buy into this? Do you think this is worthwhile stuff? 0845 900 1041. Your views coming. First, I guess this whole week has been about reworking Oscar Wilde's Ballad of Reading Gaol. John Hegley, performance poet, has been part of the project. He's here with us in the studio, and you've done this. You've done your own version of the Ballad of Reading Gaol in response to all of this, John, haven't you?
Well, I've written a couple of pieces. Just remind you of how it was in those days. This is just out of the Oscar Wilde's piece. We were as men who through a fen of filthy darkness grope. We did not dare to breathe a prayer or give our anguish scope. Something was dead in each of us, and what was dead was hope. So at the beginning when I came in, this is new area, this is new territory to me. So anyway, but this is, so I sent this to Tim Turnbull just after I'd started on the project. Just some thoughts. Cast outside and cast asunder. Make another social blunder. The cards you're dealt, it doesn't always help. Go straight to jail and don't pass out. The prison is for risen aspiration, rehabilitation, social integration, isn't it? And then later, this is yesterday. I've been writing this.
Right, okay.
And this is after a bit of experience of doing the work.
Uh-huh.
And this is called Partners in Rhyme. I said to the lads in the jail, your poems put wind in my sail. You could make it your job. We don't want to rob all the world of a chance to dance in the thrill of your gale. These lads sometimes need to be told how their poems are pieces of gold. With a bit of our aid, we can sharpen the shade of the blistering history they hold. It helps none of us if we should fail.
I love how you read that out your notebook. So they really felt hot off the press, that.
Well, I nearly read the crossed out version. I think, but look at that, that's what it looks like crossed out. I'm sorry if you can't see.
No, it's impressive. John Potter, I mean, you've been involved in this from the start. You're passionate about this. We know it's about part of rehabilitation, but just give us the numbers, if you would, on money. How much does this sort of thing cost, and why is it money well spent?
Okay. I will give the figures, because it's important for the public to understand this, certainly for this debate. The cost of the Ballads of Reading Jail project as a whole thing has been £18,000. That was paid to Company Paradiso to carry out the project, most of it from the Arts Council, who give it to promote high quality art, some of it from the BBC for the broadcast outcomes, and some of it also from the Youth Offending Service and from Thames Valley Partnerships, who are a rehabilitation organisation.
Oh. So it comes from different pots, but it's all public money ultimately.
Yes, that's
20
right.
grand
yes.
of, or knocking on for 20 grand of public money to, well, some people might say, I suppose, you know, give people who've committed serious offences who should be being punished and locked up a nicer time while they're inside.
That's right.
Why
yes.
is it not about that? Or
ultimately, yes, we always come back to this aim that we share with probation and we share with the jail, which is to stop reoffending. And I see the arts as playing a valuable part in that with certain participants.
Okay.
It's always very hard to measure. That's the thing.
Of course it is, yeah. Bring on Erwin James now. Erwin writes in The Guardian and was in prison himself for 20-odd years. Morning to you.
Good morning, Andrew.
Do you buy into this, that this kind of arts project being undertaken with people who are inside can have such benefits that we're hearing about?
Well, I buy into anything that enables people in prison to come out less inclined to cause harm and distress to other people. That's what I buy into. And the arts, my experience in prison was that the arts had a valuable role to play in that. And, I heard you say earlier, is it about giving people who've committed serious offences a nicer time in prison? And it's not about that. It's about giving them a more constructive time in prison, a more positive time in prison, so that when they get out, they're more inclined to want to succeed and more motivated to succeed. Now, a prison governor said to me once, he said, as a society, we believe in rehabilitation for prisoners, but we're not sure how rehabilitated we want them to be. Now, I'm now a member of society, and I live in a street, and I don't know who in my street has been to prison, or who might not have been. I've got no idea who is in my community. But there'll be people like me who have come out of prison, and I know how rehabilitated I want people to come out of prison. I want them to be good neighbours, because everybody that goes to prison will come out of prison, and they will be my neighbour or your neighbour. Now, this is the crux of this matter, is that everybody that goes to prison will be coming out one day, and they will have to live somewhere.
What was it that worked on you as an individual, Erwin? Well, did you have the chance to get involved in this sort of thing when you were inside?
I did. Look, I went to prison, inarticulate, ill-educated, no skills, no abilities, no confidence. I was your typical thug that people outside are afraid of. I was that kind of character. I went into prison with no hope, no aspirations, and gradually, you know, I was encouraged into education, first of all, but then I came across arts projects, drama projects. You know, I got involved in music things, and I could. But prison life is such a robust place. It's such a difficult environment to do positive things. It's very hard. You know, life on a prison landing. People think there are rules in a prison. On a prison landing, in a prison hierarchy, there's no rules, and so trying to do good things is really difficult. So getting involved, the arts is a sort of neutral place for people in prison. You can go and get involved in the arts and music or drama, or as John's talking about there, the poetry. I think that it's amazing and fantastic that John's going into the prison and working with people on poetry. Because the thing about what the arts did for me, it made me feel some value in myself. It made me feel better about myself when I created something good.
Sure.
Now, look, I've got to tell you this, Andrew.
Was part of that other people were impressed by it?
Well, not impressed.
Or just that you were impressed by it yourself?
I was amazed that I had some good... I found some good qualities in myself. And this is what the arts does. It does it for anybody. But in prison, it's particularly important because people who feel good about themselves are less likely to want to cause harm and distress to other people.
Gotcha. Erwin, thank you for now. Erwin James is a Guardian columnist with us. We've got Rod Little, who writes for all sorts of papers, with us as well. What do you make of this, Rod? Do you believe in this stuff?
Yeah, I couldn't have put it any more eloquently than Erwin did. I mean, I can't imagine why anybody would object to this. It just seems to me to be sort of missing the point in a sort of red herring. I mean, I think there's a debate to be had, if you want to be tough about it, that some sentences aren't long enough. I think there's a sort of general consensus, you know, that certain crimes, and particularly crimes of violence, but also to a degree burglaries and so on, do not attract the sort of sentences which people feel is somehow right. But that shouldn't be confused with what you do with the person when they're in prison. And the point seems to be that anything which might help rehabilitate people who are in prison has to be a good thing. I just do not see the argument against
it. I mean, I guess the argument, right or wrong, would be it sort of ties into this notion that, you know, going to prison's a bit like a holiday camp. You can play on your Xbox, you can watch the television, and people will come in and help you play the guitar and write songs.
Well, what do they want people to... Well, in the 21st century, how do they wish prisoners to be treated? Hung up by their thumbs? I mean, it's ludicrous. I mean, the thing that they're deprived of is liberty. And that is a punishment, and it's a huge punishment. So there you have the punitive element of what society does to people who break the law. But even today, I assume most people would prefer prison to have some rehabilitative element. Even those who think it should be primarily about punishment, they must wish for prisoners who are about to come out that they are slightly different to the way they were when they went in, and better.
Because otherwise, there'd just be more victims.
Otherwise, there'll just be more victims. I mean, I don't know how far, I don't know what studies have been done, which shows to what degree arts courses, poetry, painting and so on, actually help. Actually, you know, statistically reduce the number of recidivists and so on. I mean, I don't know. But my guess is, I mean, and Erwin put it rightly, that if it raises self-esteem to the degree that people might begin to think again about the crimes they inflict on other people, then it must surely be a good thing.
Rod, thank you. Rod Little, journalist with us. Like to hear your opinion on this. That's what you're saying this morning. Judy first up in Reading. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Andrew. I taught for a while. I was a tutor. And I went into probation services to teach guys. And I also did a bit of poetry with them and just creative writing. And it was the most amazing thing because in the beginning they were a bit hesitant to do it and they didn't want to read out what they had written. And what I started off was, who am I? And I gave them a model that they could work from. It was a famous work. I can't remember who it was by. And they modeled it on that. And you can't believe how wonderful it was that they realized that what they did, they could express themselves, and it was quite amazing. They expressed really deep things, and then they were very keen to share. And when new students came into the group, those guys were so protective of me and what we were doing. They would just say to the other guys, come on, we're here to have fun. We're not being judged. We enjoy ourselves, and it's great. And I can't tell you the difference that I could see in the guys, how they felt about themselves.
So having done something quite similar, a similar sort of experience of like, you know, being surprised by how much people, you know, bought into it and the impact it had on them.
Yeah, and they were very keen to do it afterwards. They, we actually started building up a bit of a portfolio, and there was a, on I can't remember what the thing was, it was doing through the colleges and so on, where you could submit work, and they were publishing a book. I can't remember what it was called, but they actually made up a piece. I sent in about 10 pieces from my students. None of them were published, but it was just so good to see how their confidence in themselves, and the fact that they, lots of them didn't have good literacy skills, but they still wrote, and it was actually, it was very touching. And they, after a while, they were very keen to read out what they had written when they realized, because I did as well. I wrote mine down and I would read mine out first. And then they could see that there were actually similarities, and it was really good for them. It was a very, very positive...
Judy, thank you very much for the call. Good to hear from you. Good to hear from someone who's done this kind of thing before. And I know some of the people involved in this project, John, have been saying, well, right, okay, we're into it now. Can it carry on forever kind of thing? And, you know, that's a challenge, isn't it?
Yes, completely.
Try and find, you know, some more cash to be able to fund the thing to continue. Richard's in Reading. Hi, Richard.
Hello there.
What do you make of all this?
Well, I've been thinking about this, and when you consider that, well, the state the country's in at the moment, with an alien NHS service and a failing education service, taxpayers' money going on something like this probably isn't the best way for it to be spent. I think, although you'd want prisoners to be rehabilitated, I think rather than spending lots of money on this and giving them an easier life when they're inside, maybe we should make our prisons something that people don't want to be in. I don't know what the risk of reoffending is in the likes of Thailand or Turkey or the Middle East.
Where prisons
are
tougher.
I'm sure there wouldn't be many that go back.
Talk to Richard, guys, in the studio. You believe in this project. And this, I'm sure, Richard represents what a lot of our listeners will be thinking. Well, it's all very lovely, but hang on a minute, you know, don't we need the 20 grand to spend on cancer patients and stuff like that? So talk to Richard.
I think go to the specific cases that we've heard this week. I think the stories in a way speak for themselves, and I would recall Jamie's story from Tuesday, if people remember that, those wonderful rap lines.
Yeah, I remembered listening to that.
Did you hear that Jamie went into prison, well, into a secure training centre, they call it, kiddie prison, at 14, and he came out, you know, he said, and he was, if anything, worse.
I did, yes, and I felt for him. But when you think about it, I wonder how many of his victims, you know, are glad that he's been given that treatment, you know, if he was going around burgling people's houses and selling drugs to their children.
Well, they wouldn't want him to do it again.
Obviously, but do you think they'd have been impressed that while they've lived and suffered from what he's done, that he's been inside and had this sort of program or what have you, having money spent on him, being able to play his Xbox all day long?
I just think that, in a sense, we have to be really careful about victims and make sure that they're protected, and that, in a sense, they're, make sure that when people come on radio or when their work is made public, that the appropriate protection is given. So very often those people whose work is being made public are doing it anonymously.
Richard, thank you for the call. We've got some other people I want to get on, but I'm going to move on. But thank you very much indeed for calling the show.
No worries.
It's Richard in Reading. Here's Chris in Reading. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Talk to us, Chris. Are you impressed by what you've heard this week? Does this sound like a good thing?
I suppose my view is a bit split on it. I fully agree with your previous caller there. Yeah, you know, great, play your Xbox all day, be a naughty boy, etc. However, if people are absolutely and genuinely contrite and they have a genuine remorse where they genuinely want to rehabilitate themselves into society, fine. Go and do it, but someone's got to be the expert to sort the chaff from the wheat, because there's an awful lot of people out there that has an easy ride. You know, let's go and do this, we get a few bob spent on, and so on. Once again, the victims come into it. What do they get?
John Hegley, you've been into the prisons, you've worked with the guys. Do you feel that they are in the, you know, Chris's first list, people who genuinely are interested in rehabilitation or just wanting a bit of a laugh?
Well, first thing is, what's an Xbox anyway?
I'm not sure it came into our came into our project, but I think I started the whole hair running, so apologies for that.
The guys wanted to move on. It was a creative thing, it was a hopeful thing, it was people experiencing more of each other, they were being less isolated, they're broadening out. I think a lot of I don't know much about, I'm not a criminologist, but I think if you make people less isolated, be part more of the social group, they are less likely to be doing these stuff and are more likely to be social animals.
Chris?
I don't know. I can't see that they're being isolated. You see, most of these, I don't know, I suppose I can't really use the word over the radio, what I feel about them, but most of these guys, and they are the younger generation, I don't say youngsters, but the younger generation, you know, they're always in a group, so they're not isolated, not at all. It's not like a one on his own with nothing to do, so he goes out and does the criminal acts.
But I mean isolated perhaps from the rest of society, but Thelian, that's nothing to do with
me. That's what they form themselves into.
But we've got to try and stop that, though. But we've got to try and stop that. We've got to try and stop these folk feeling they're alienated from it.
Spend all the money on that.
How else are you going to do it?
Who choose it? Why not spend it on cancer research?
Chris, I'm going to move on, as I say, to other people, but a great point, well made. Thank you for coming on the show. Good man.
Thank you.
That's Chris in Reading. Here's Andy next. Hi, Andy.
Good morning, Andrew.
What do you make of all this?
Again, with the previous callers, I think it's totally wrong. I don't see the reason why these monies should be spent on prisoners. When prison, they've been sent to prison for a reason. And, you know, prison every day is becoming more of an holiday camp for these people. So to reoffend and go back in prison is nothing to them, because they say they can spend the time, no problem at all. And, yeah, again, you know, that's our taxpayers' money that is being taken out of the government to pay for these people. And, you know, I totally disagree with it, Andrew.
Okay, can I just say this about having been in and having a small experience of the prisons? I don't know how many of you callers have any experience of going into the jail. It's not an holiday camp. I was absolutely shocked when the guy said they came out to do this hour, have this hour of working with us. Then they went back into their cells. And I said, oh, when are they coming out again? They said, oh, no, they're not coming out again. That's it. They're in there 23 hours. That's not an holiday camp. And, you know, 23 hours on an Xbox. I don't know what an Xbox is, but I don't want 20, you know, is 23 hours on that thing really good?
So your concern, Andy, is that, you know, people might be thinking, well, I quite enjoyed that, you know, that poetry and the singing lessons and all that in prison, so I'll go and commit some more crime, get a bit more of that. That's your worry?
Well, that's correct, yeah, because it'd be interesting to see the figures of how many people have these rehabilitation lessons and then actually do reoffend again. And I do know people who work in the prison, and yet again, what happened to the days of hard labour within the prison? Why aren't they going out on the streets cleaning and tidying up areas that actually need tidying up and spend the money on things like that instead and put people off going in prison again? Because at the end of the day, it's okay teaching them all this poetry, but yet again, what is the percentage of people who do reoffend?
I don't think they're wanting, thinking, ah, oh, right, I did those poetry lessons, I'm going back for that.
Final caller, Robin in Henley. Hi, Robin.
Yeah, hello.
What do you make of what you've been hearing?
Well, I think it's very interesting. I think the experiment is very interesting. You know, you can discuss the point of other chaps are saying about whether the money should be spent on criminals or not, but my feeling is that if it's showing to be a positive and a positive response from everything being done, why don't you draw it further along the line and bring it into schools and encourage people to do it before they become criminals?
Sort of prevention better than cure, kind of, the principle you're espousing there, isn't it?
Yes.
Fancy that, John Potter?
Well, yes, absolutely, but the schools...
Do it with the kids before they commit the crime in the first place?
Schools, I think primary schools these days are fantastic and are doing a brilliant job with creative writing.
I've got to say that I contacted the Howard League for Prison Reform, and they said that... I told my friend this, I was talking to my friend, and I told him I've been doing this research about this, and I told him, I said to him, 80% of the people in jail have a reading age under 11, and he said the other 30% can't add up.
Very good. At that point, what a great moment to leave it on. John Hegley, John Potter, thank you for being involved.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show this morning.